Good evening. Welcome to the regular meeting of the Terre Haute City Council, 6 p.m. Thursday, January 10th, 2019. We'll start our meeting tonight as we normally do with a moment of silence and the Pledge of Allegiance led by Councilperson Amy Holler.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Michelle, would you please call the roll?
Councilperson Aller.
Here.
Councilperson Azar.
Present.
Councilperson DeBon.
Here.
I'm sorry, Councilperson Crossan.
Present.
I forgot. Councilperson DeBon.
I'm here.
Councilperson Elliott.
Here.
Councilperson Garrison. Councilperson Morris.
Here.
Councilperson Nation.
Here.
Councilperson Nasser.
Present.
And Councilman Garrison is here, so all are present.
Thank you. We now will have 30 minutes of time for the public to comment on non-agenda items. If you are not sure whether what you're here for is an agenda item or not, there are agendas up here at the front. On the front pew here. We do ask that if you do want to make a comment on a non-agenda item that you limit yourself to around 3 minutes. We do have a very full agenda tonight, and we also may have a lot of people who want to comment on non-agenda items, so we want everybody to have a chance. So if there is anybody that wants to do that, please come to the podium, say your name and your address, and we'll be happy to hear from you.
My name is Donald Hyde. I live at 1411 Poplar Street, Terre Haute, Indiana. I was going to talk about one thing, but after meeting with the mayor for a brief moment, I'll wait and do it during the agenda discussions. Instead, I will talk about something that's not on the agenda, but it should be, and that's leadership. Right now, we've got the county council putting in the newspaper that they've got 3 places that they've decided on to think about where they're going to build the jail, meaning that they haven't made up their mind yet where they're going to build the new jail. And one of the places they have not yet put on the agenda or checked into, as far as I'm concerned, is keeping it near where it actually sits now. I heard the discussions both at the county level and at the city level, especially the last city council meeting that you guys held, which was one of the best meetings I've attended. And the guy that was building the new jail, who's got the contract to build a new jail, said he needed 1 square block to build his building. 1 square block. Well, in this government herald here, over here, if you base it on the 1 square block theory, you got a parking lot over here, and part of this up here behind the thing here, if you added it all up, it would make 1 square block. In other words, they could build it here. Now, granted, they'd have to get the place over here, this was former Carcival place with all the parking lot there, they'd have to get that, turn that into parking lots. But what that would do, it would keep the ability to save money for the next how many years of busing everybody from either the other side of the mall, way up north, or somewhere out in here. And by the way, all 3 of those places I tried to find. I had a friend in a car. We couldn't find him. Yet, they're telling us taxpayers in the newspapers, this is the county and city, that's where they want to build it. Well, I would think they'd want to build it there. They'd build it somewhere nobody can find. When you're having a jail, you've got to build it somewhere people can get to, know where it is. It just saves a lot of problems. What I'm saying to you is leadership is where, like I said before, whether you're the city council or not, leadership is you guys provide leadership. You may not have a vote on where that finally goes, but you should at least be commented on. They should ask your opinion, because who knows where the opinion's going to come with the right answers. But if you don't bother asking anybody at all, then you don't get any other answers. And whatever you decide is what's going to happen. And we, the taxpayers, and we, the county citizens that live here, are stuck with whatever you get. Isn't that exactly what got us in this mess in the first place, back in 82, when they didn't discuss things, didn't do things right? and they didn't build the jail good enough. Then, in court cost, in 98, they built it and made it bigger and remodeled it. But again, I was here, in taxpayer and working, paying taxes. I don't remember ever hearing them talk to the public, city or county-wise, about what they're going to do with the new jail. They built it, and now, all of a sudden, all the things that they were supposed to cure didn't get fixed long. And now we're forced to build a brand new jail from the ground up. And like I said, our arms are behind my back. When I say that, I'm talking about us as a whole taxpaying community. Our arms are behind our back. We have to build it. Fine. My final point, and I'll say it again. If we're going to build it, for God's sakes, have the leadership of this county, the leadership of this city, and the mayor get together and make sure it's built right and will last at least 40 plus years so we don't tie up our money up the city and the county for the same project every 20 years. It never ends. Now, I don't know anybody that thinks that's good government. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else from the public would like to comment on a non-agenda item?
My name is Ryan Carter, 655 3rd Avenue. I just want to say and wish you guys best of luck that I'm running for city council at large this year. And I just want to say and show you guys who I am. All right. Have a good night.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the public who would like to comment on a non-agenda item?
My name is Matt Lermer, 363 West Kettsinger Drive, Terre Haute, Indiana, 47802. I recently wrote a letter to the Tribune-Star that was published making them aware of an acquisition from the Terre Haute Police Department. I'm sure they were aware. making them aware of my desire for the Terre Haute Police Department to send back a Bearcat armored emergency personnel vehicle. My dad was a carpenter. He's raised and lived and worked in Terre Haute for decades as a carpenter. And one of the things that he taught me growing up was that for every job you have to do, there is a certain tool that's made for that job. And so serving in the Marine Corps, I'm aware of a lot of these vehicles and the purposes that they were designed for. And they're not designed for civilian policing. The Bearcat and the mine-resistant vehicle that the Terre Haute Police Department had already acquired through programs to transfer military equipment to local law enforcement agencies. I believe, as a citizen, I believe that they were acquired genuinely to make our officers safer. But as a citizen, I also believe that the police department's seeking out an acquisition of military-style vehicles in our community is not going to make our community safer. I think it's going to increase the tension, the fear, and the anxiety that exists between some citizens and the police department. I believe that trust is an essential element between law enforcement and the community. And when the community sees the police department seeking out and acquiring military-style vehicles without a sufficient cause or need for those types of vehicles, it breaks that trust. And what I believe will happen is it will make our officers less safe. It'll increase the fear, the tension. It'll diminish the trust in the community, and it'll increase the likelihood that we will have events that will endanger the lives of our officers. So I just wanted to inform you as a council, and hopefully I would like to get your support in reaching out to the police department and asking them to send those vehicles, find a way to send those vehicles back. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else on a non-agenda item? Okay, not seeing anyone. Michelle, are there any corrections in the journal?
There are none.
Communication from the mayor? Not tonight. Okay, there are some things that are going to fall under reports from city officials tonight. First of all, I was negligent earlier. I wanted to just comment that I know we've got a lot of students here tonight from Rosehalman and Terre Haute North, I believe, and I think we have at least one elementary school student here, too. I'm not sure what school he goes to. But at any rate, we're always glad to have all of you here, but particularly have young people here learning about how government works. So welcome to all of you. I also wanted to bring up a subject that isn't directly on the agenda here, and I want to first say that it was actually Councilperson Earl Elliott's idea. I think it's an excellent one. And that is to add some, if not all, of our future meetings to offer the opportunity for a community organization to share briefly with us something like 2 to 5 minutes at a meeting, some work they're doing to move our community forward. And I appreciate Earl bringing this idea to me. I'm going to publicly ask all of my colleagues here on the council to let me know of groups or I suppose even an individual, but it's mostly groups who might be good for us and for the public to hear from, and we'll try to get that started at our first meeting in February. So I just wanted to bring that up. Next, we have a number of appointments to announce and to approve tonight. One is the appointment of just our council committees and who's going to chair those and the members. We don't have to act on those. It's available to all of our council members, and I would ask Michelle to post that, if possible, on the website. So if any member of the public wants to see that, they can, or if you want to see it tonight, you're welcome to come up and ask me. I'll just name the committees briefly and the chairperson of those committees tonight. First committee, and these are standing committees of the council. The first committee is Finance, Contract, and Appropriation and Franchises, and the chairman of that committee is Councilperson Elliott. The next committee is Governmental Affairs, Parks, and Public Property. The chairperson is Councilperson George Azar. Planning, Zoning, and Improvements, chair is Councilperson Todd Nation. And Traffic, Public Safety, Special Health, and Welfare, and the chairperson is Councilperson Amy Aller. The next item, though, are appointments that need to be approved by the council. Traditionally, the president has read these appointments, and they've been approved by one motion of the council. Unless there's any objection to that by council members, we'll proceed that way this evening. I will read those in the interest of the public knowing them, but they are physically in front of council people, and I think on your agendas, if any of you have agendas in the audience. Some of these are committees that the council is required by law to appoint one of their members to, or requested by the advisory board or commission to appoint a member to. Some are ones that the council has an appointment to by the bylaws of the group that the person's being appointed to. The first one is the 9/11 Advisory Board. I'm recommending that I be appointed to that. Area Planning, Councilperson Karen Nasser. Transportation Policy Committee, Councilperson Earl Elliott. Downtown Terre Haute, Councilperson Curtis DeBond. Riverscape, Councilperson Neil Garrison. Animal Control, Lori Tharp. Information Technology, Dr. Steve Chenoweth and Chris Garner. Redevelopment, Brian Connolly and Jim Nichols, and the Trees Advisory Board, Brian Connolly. I would now entertain a motion, if there are no questions by council people, that those appointments be approved.
Madam so President.
Moved. Go ahead. So moved.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay. It has been moved by Councilperson Don Morris and seconded by Councilperson Neil Garrison. That this list of appointments be approved. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. They are approved. We do have one appointment which we had two. We have one position that's available, and we have two people who have expressed interest in that position. This has happened at least once before in our history, and it's been handled in the following way. I will ask council if anyone wants to nominate either of those persons. We will hear those nominations. Once those nominations have been made, We will have a voice vote on each nomination, only asking for the ayes. If it is clear that there is a majority by that voice vote, we will call in on that. If not, I'll ask for a roll call. We do not need a second on these nominations either. So I will open it up to council if you would like to know. And this position is, excuse me, the Police Merit Commission. So I would ask council if anyone desires to nominate.
I'll nominate Shelva Warner.
Okay. Second.
There has been a nomination for Shelva Warner. Councilperson Aller.
I nominate Lyle Curtis.
Second. Oh, do we need a second?
No. Need a second.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
Okay, that's all right. Better to have one and not need it than need one and not have one.
So.
Okay, so the two nominations for the Police Merit Board are Curtis Lyle and Shelva Warner. In alphabetical order, just to be fair, I'll ask for an aye vote on each of those. All those in favor of Curtis Lyle, please say aye.
Aye.
All those in favor of Shelva Warner, please say aye.
Aye.
I believe the votes for Shelva Warner are clearly in the majority there, and so Shelva will be our appointment to the Police Merit Board. I also want to report that there are two other appointments that we will not ask for approval on tonight, and that is at the request of those boards, because there's still some work being done on persons to nominate for those. One is fire merit, and the other is there's another position on the Animal Control Board that will be filled, hopefully, at the February meeting. If there are any questions about those appointments? Thank you very much. We really appreciate all those who are willing to be on these boards and commissions. Some of them involve more work than others, but we're always happy to see people from the public step up for those.
Okay. There are no reports from Board of Public Works and Safety.
Okay. Reports from standing committees?
There are none.
Reports from non-standing committees?
I believe there are none.
Okay. Items previously tabled.
Special Ordinance 28-2018, vacating a portion of 4th Street located between Greenwood Street to the north and Preston Street to the south. This was previously tabled and no problems were noted.
Okay. Is petitioner present? State your name if you would.
My name is Thomas Densford. Mm-hmm. I'm here for representing the Indiana Railroad.
Okay.
This has been presented to the board to the council about a month or so ago. It has to do with a crossing at 4th Street that is kind of a curious alignment. That has resulted in at least one accident involving the train and a vehicle. The train traffic has increased in this area considerably due to the number of customers in the area, and we are asking, or the railroad is asking, that a portion of 4th Street be closed in order to accommodate more train traffic crossing the area and to allow for a safer vehicular traffic across 4th Street. The petition has been presented. It's been continued a number of times, and it's our hope that the council has had the opportunity to evaluate the area and evaluate the conditions and consider the proposal to close a portion of 4th Street. There's one objector to the petition to close the crossing that we've attempted to reach some agreement, some accommodation with. The area in question, if 4th Street is closed, would involve some inconvenience, certainly, but that wouldn't involve a significant derailment or significant area of inconvenience about, I mean, we're asking that if this area is closed, that the customers of the crossing would be required to drive approximately, a minute or two around the block to access their building. So the railroad does not believe that this is a significant inconvenience to the businesses in the area. It does create a significant safety concern that would be alleviated, and the railroad is asking that the portion of 4th Street be vacated. If there's any questions, comments, concerns, we'd be happy to address them.
Thank you. Is there anyone from the public who would like to comment about Special Ordinance 28?
Last time I didn't know where this street was and what 4th Street was like. After finding out what it is, I don't see what the problem is with closing that street.
Thank you.
Good evening, Madam President, fellow members of the council. My name is Richard Shagley. I'm an attorney with Wright, Shagley & Lowry, and tonight I'm here representing the two objectors, Rick Lazier and Kevin Caldwell. Rick Lazier owns a building on 4th Street, and Kevin Caldwell, as you know, owns Burger Chrysler there on 3rd Street, and then the auto body shop that's on 4th Street. I want to start by thanking Tom. He has been more than gracious and patient with us in trying to work out a resolution. Unfortunately, we couldn't come to one. Although Tom indicates that it's not a significant problem for a burger, anytime a small business owner has to outlay capital for an improvement that doesn't bring in additional revenue, that is a significant problem. And that's what would happen here. So as a result, they're opposing it. The other thing, as we discussed last time, there was an accident. And if I may approach and pass out
sure. Two things. Is that okay?
Absolutely.
Okay. What I'm handing out is an aerial of the area, which shows the the area that we're discussing tonight. And then the second item is a picture of the accident that happened 2 years ago. And so to begin on the top is the aerial. We try to highlight what each item is. The accident that happened was actually on Preston, not 4th Street. So as I stated last month, even if 4th Street was closed 20 years ago, the accident that happened a year and a half, that wouldn't have prevented it. If you flip to the second page, this is a picture from the incident. The white block is to protect the innocent. But what you see here is a truck that hit a stopped train or might have been moving. The driver doesn't recall. He clearly wasn't paying attention. And this, again, was on Preston, not 4th Street. Mr. Caldwell asked the driver to be here tonight to admit to his error. But I think it's pretty clear from the photo that the error was on the driver in this situation. Fortunately, no one was hurt in that incident. But unfortunately, closing 4th Street wouldn't have prevented an accident on Preston. What may have prevented the accident on Preston would have been lights or arm bars. But as you know, if you've traveled that area, most of the intersections that railroad crosses doesn't have lights or arms. Why that's not being discussed this evening, we don't know.
Part of that is, and as you can see on the first page that was handed out, 4th Street, it's a strange layout, and really all the tracks through there on that line, because the angles is a problem. And there isn't enough room to put lights currently on Preston at those tracks. So closing 4th Street would allow that room. But as we have not heard anything about lights being put up, simply just closing 4th Street. I will disclose I am not a travel expert, but my suspicion would be if you closed 4th Street, that would only speed up the traffic on Preston because there would be no fear or concern of cars approaching you on 4th Street. So I think without putting the lights and barriers up, you're almost making it a more dangerous intersection, because with the known cars approaching on 4th Street, it actually slows down traffic. Obviously, it can't prevent the one incident that happened since the existence of these tracks, but I'm not too sure what could have prevented that. So the not significant outlay that my client is going to be required to do could be prevented if they would put up some lights or brick, but I'm not too sure they're willing to lay out that, what I believe is to be a significant outlay of income. So they're just trying to force the cost onto my client, which we don't believe is fair, and as a result, they're here this evening to object to this closure of 4th Street. I would be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Is there any other comment from the public on Special Ordinance 28? If not, are there any?
Yes. I have a question. The main entrance for business for the Collision Center is off of 4th Street, correct?
That's correct.
And then across the street, is that a house there in the?
Across 4th Street?
Yes.
That is a property owned by Mr. Laser.
Is that the only entrance to that, as it looks from 4th Street?
That's correct.
So what would he do if we closed that?
Well, he just couldn't go down 4th Street. He'd have to come in off Greenwood, and that's it.
So there's an entrance.
The potential closure, if I may approach again.
But there doesn't look like an entrance or a lane back there. I may be wrong. But
No, they would just go off here. They would just want to close right there.
Oh, okay.
The rest of that open.
I see. I yield.
Just to follow up on the light situation, why isn't that part of a solution for the safety instead of closing the whole street?
Well, it's no real solution, no effective solution. The problem is the angle that 4th Street presents to the railroad tracks. I mean, if you wouldn't mind, if I may approach and present an aerial photograph. The problem is not lights. The problem is not warnings. The problem is not street signs. The problem is the angle at which 4th Street intersects with the railroad track. There is absolutely no ability coming from the south to see a train behind the track. So whether you're traveling to an area business or whatever, the reality is you would have to look behind your rearview mirror, behind your vehicle, to see the train coming. That is our problem.
If you could just, so people do watch this online, if you could just go to the podium and answer that.
The issue is that the angle is so obtuse, if you're approaching from south, that there is no way to see an oncoming train. The presence of lights or the presence of other warning signals are simply inappropriate, and they just present an accurate inability to see a train coming from 3rd Street
Well, one accident is one too many, but other than this incident here, has there been any other incidents at that crossing?
In honesty, we are not here because one newspaper vehicle collided with the train. That incident kind of pointed a spotlight on this intersection, and the opinion of the railroad is that this is an accident waiting to happen, not necessarily related to the accident that's already happened. So the notion that this is an attempt to eliminate potential accidents on Preston Street is something of a, I mean, it's not like what our focus is. Our focus is the client from the other side of 3rd Street coming across in train traffic, increased train traffic, coming across 4th Street to 3rd Street, and that's what we're trying to eliminate, the potential for vehicular traffic crossing 4th Street, turning right on Preston, and limiting the potential for vehicular traffic and train traffic intersecting at this point.
Later on in the meeting this evening, we're going to talk about another street closure, and I know that there's been a traffic study done with that. Has there been some type of study that showed what type of increase would be on the other street if we were to close this one? Okay. I yield.
Councilperson Morris.
Chuck, I hate to do this to you. Can I bring you up here to look at this? Look, I didn't even look around. Chuck Ennis.
Thank you, ma'am.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Chuck. Are you familiar with this area?
Yes, sir, I am. Chuck Ennis, city engineer.
Is there anything we can do as far as signage or anything like that? Give me your opinion on this.
I've been around here a long time. I've been where you sit. Yep. 20 years ago, we closed at-grade crossings all over town over the years. I don't work for the railroad, but I understand their position.
Sure.
Anything they can do to reduce the hazard, reduce the risk, reduce the potential for accidents, it works in their favor. They have liability issues at every crossing, and they actually run calculations on the liability issues for these crossings. The traffic volume in this neighborhood is very, very light. Hundreds of cars a day at the most. We've looked at it. I don't think it's going to create too much of an inconvenience. Yes, for the businesses in the neighborhood, they would have to go around the block to get to, if they're traveling through that intersection, they'll have to get around the block to get to their facilities. That your decision, I guess, is to weigh in the risk and the hazard versus the inconvenience.
You didn't answer my question, yeah. Chuck. Thank you, though. I yield. He's running for office.
As an attorney, I'd say he nailed it.
Yeah. Yeah. I yield.
I'm just a little confused. If the accident happened on Preston, and why are we talking about 4th?
We're not here because of an accident on Preston. We're here because that particular accident was reported, it was processed, it was evaluated, and it brought a certain amount of attention to this intersection. And the intersection with Preston is not the issue. The intersection with Preston is very much a 90-degree angle. The intersection with 4th Street is an obtuse angle, that you cannot see train traffic coming from the south. And that is why it has nothing to do, I mean, this request, this petition, has nothing to do with the accident on Preston. And the fact that the fella delivering papers that morning is here has nothing to do with the request that's being made of this council. The request that's being made is to close a portion of 4th Street so that people driving
on 4th Street who have to look over their right shoulder to see train traffic will have to make an alternative route, maybe a two-minute detour or less to accommodate local businesses. But the point is the safety issue and the safety factor is why we're here. And that's the only reason why. And if you look at the aerial photographs or you drive out to that area, you will see a very peculiar alignment between where the train tracks go, run, and where the 4th Street ends at the intersection of Preston. And by closing 4th Street at Preston, that will eliminate that entire safety risk. Eliminate it completely.
What between the two parties that are talking, or the three that are talking about this, and you had said you could not come to an agreement, what in the agreement was so difficult to agree on?
Okay, there's been no agreement. We met out at this site last August, and we requested proposals from the adjoining property owners. We've received nothing. And that has been month after month. We've been for this commission, and nothing has been forthcoming other than a vague objection to closing a portion of 4th Street and these considerable references to significant hardship on the business. The railroad's having a difficult time accepting that there is any legitimate, significant hardship on the business. This is not advertised separately. You look at the website for the dealership, you don't see the body shop. You see absolutely no references. There's a sign on the body shop, but there's nothing out on the main roads. There's nothing on 4th Street. There's nothing on Preston. So the notion that this is a hardship to them is a bit it's difficult to accept that a customer who is referred from the dealership to the body shop has to drive 90 seconds around a block to accommodate a road closure is a non-issue as far as the railroads.
Mr. Shagley, what would it take for your clients to accept the closure and reach some kind of an agreement that would be satisfactory to their business?
If we're here for public safety, we close this road and put up arms and lights. If we're going to make this safe, let's make it safe. Because this idea that I can't look over my right shoulder is a joke. If you've gone down 4th Street, that train's going so slow that if there is a train, you can see it. And they have horns. They blow the horns. So you can see that train. If we're truly here for public safety tonight, my clients can make the investment and risk losing customers. But if we're truly here for public safety, my clients would agree to allow this road to be closed if they'll put up arms and lights.
If I may comment on that. The railroad does not have the authority to put up arms and lights. I mean, these are federally regulated corridors. So it's not like the decision can be made at the council level or at the Indiana Railroad level to put up arms and lights. It's a federal issue. The solution that is suggested is simply not within the authority of the railroad or with this council to effectuate.
Okay, I have one more question and I'll yield to somebody else. What if this council would choose to deny the closure? Does that affect the liability issue if there were an accident and it was the railroad's fault?
If you assume that there's an accident that's the railroad's fault?
Yeah. And if we, due to the fact that the road was, and you, the railroad may come up and say, well, had the road been closed, this would not have happened.
I can assure you that the railroad will present the case that they were here requesting public safety issues be implemented. And if they're not, then the consequences will fall. In terms of any future accident, I mean, that's what we're trying, that's what we're here trying to avoid. So the notion that, that there may be some accident waiting to happen, I mean, that's why we're here. That's why we've been here for the last several meetings. That's why we've invested the time and the effort in presenting this issue to the council. And the flip side, if you want to consider upside downside, okay, the downside is that somebody gets hurt at that intersection because they get run over by a train when they're either trying to beat the train because the Third Street signals and crossings are closed, and so they try to head around Preston or 4th Street to beat that and save 2 minutes to wherever they're going. That accident occurs because 4th Street is not closed. I mean, that to me is the worst case scenario. I mean, that's what we're here trying to avoid.
Go ahead. Thank you.
I have a question, and that is, you say that it's not the railroad's prerogative to put, as I understand it, to put in lights or any kind of blocking or thing there. How does that happen? How would a community seek out getting lights or arms or some sort of marking on that?
On a secondary, I mean, all right, if you look at Third Street, that is a regulated, secured area where the traffic counts are significant enough to justify the arms and the safety features. The area we're talking about is simply not. I mean, the train traffic is not sufficient. It is not an area where the railroad would consider petitioning the federal government and the city council to install the kinds of safety features that it's been suggested in order to, you know, accommodate a fairly low level of traffic. So to answer your question, I mean, there are applications that have to be submitted. They're based on traffic counts. They're based on accident counts. They're based on a number of different factors that this particular intersection simply doesn't meet.
I guess my question is by whom, and I think the fact that our mayor stood up for this, he might have something to offer us here. Yes, please.
Okay. Madam President, members of the council, Mayor Duke Bennett, I just wanted to kind of give you a little bit of background on a project we worked on with Indiana Railroad. And first of all, I'll say we've had a great relationship with Indiana Railroad, and we appreciate that. At 7th Street, there were no signals there, if you know. And so during my administration, Chuck Innes and his team and Tom Hoback, the CEO of Indiana Railroad at the time, Peter Ray, the director of engineering at Indiana Railroad at the time, took care of that. They got used signals from another community they had taken out. They installed those there. I'm sure they had to get federal approval. I'm not saying that, but that was a decision that was strictly done with the administration in Indiana Railroad. It did not come to the city council, and it can be done, I guess. I'm just saying. I'm not trying to dispute what you're saying, sir, but I wanted to give you that experience of what we went through. It was very easy to get that signal put in on 7th Street, and I just wanted to share that with you as I was sitting listening to that because I had personal experience of being involved with that to make it happen.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor.
I think it's the same one, just farther south.
Again, if we're
talking...
Well, could we petition to do that? I mean, how long does that take?
It was a process.
If we're going to close this road for public safety, there's hundreds more we need to close. So, but in reality, this isn't a, there was an incident. Every road tract has potential, but the hardship that this puts on my client in a small business, you put an obstacle between you and your customer, every little obstacle can hurt you. And as a small business owner, that's a big risk. for what we're talking about here today.
Thank you. Councilwoman Ollie.
And I, again, don't work for the railroad or know much, but I was under the assumption that all railroad crossings, I thought it was a few years ago, had to either go to have either a light or an arm.
No, ma'am. I mean, there are hundreds of crossings, everywhere from rural crossings that go from one side of the property to another, to these types of crossings that actually, I mean, this is a historic accident, if you will. I mean, the railroad came through decades and decades ago. This was platted hundreds of years ago, and it has kind of evolved into the situation that it is right now. The notion that this is 7th Street, it's not 7th Street. I mean, this is a back area of limited traffic, limited train traffic, limited vehicular traffic. And that is why the railroad has proposed a solution that is, you know, economically in line with the proposed traffic. You've got one potential business owner that may have some insignificant, mm-hmm. undefined inconvenience where his customers have to drive around the block. I drove around that block on the way here. It takes, you know, mm-hmm. 30, 40 seconds to get around this area if 4th Street is closed.
Okay.
So this is not a main thoroughfare. It is not an area that implies or even remotely would require the kind of crossing guards or the kinds of safety features that you have on 7th Street. And to suggest otherwise is just exaggerating the situation and exaggerating the minor inconvenience that area businesses may have if a portion of 4th Street is closed.
Okay. Just a couple things while I saw the floor here. The first thing is, whether this road stays open or this road stays closed, I think that I'd feel better if there was some kind of lights or some kind of
warning.
Something. Warning, yeah. Lights. I've drove through there. Second thing is, I know I've talked to both of you when this first came up, and I asked for it to be withdrawn to hope that two sides could come together and see how we're still at odds. I just wish you could have come to some kind of compromise.
Well, first off, the Indiana Railroad is not at odds with anyone. There's been no proposal presented by Bungler or any of the adjoining property owners to make any kind of accommodation. We met on this site last August and requested...
So there's been no communication since
there's
last
been
August.
Communication, there's been no proposal. So the notion that there's some kind of resolution, that takes two people. And we've received no, we being the Indiana Railroad, have received no proposal, no accommodation, no anything to resolve whatever minor inconvenience might be opposed or by the adjacent property owners. Nothing. Nothing. So the notion that there's some compromise here, you know, that assumes there's two people making a discussion. We've made overtures. We've received nothing in response. Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't mind responding to that in just a second.
Go ahead.
Have we turned over a formal proposal to resolve this issue? No. In our discussions, when we indicated that there would be any type of monetary help with these expenses, the numbers that were proposed weren't going to cover Mr. Caldwell's expenses. And as a result, you know, as a small business owner, to put out an outlay and not have any type of return, generally you invest in your business because you know there's going to be something on the backside for you. But this would just be an expense for really... As Mr. Dinsford said, you know, once in a thousand year incident.
Mr. Dinsford did not say once in a thousand.
Well, not a thousand.
and you're talking about numbers that have never been quantified.
Okay,
I
would like to. If either of you want to speak to the council, that's fine, but we don't want you to argue this here in front of us between each other. So.
Thank you.
Thank you. I do see, I believe it's one of the business owners standing there, and I am going to give him the opportunity.
Yeah, Council President Martha and City Council, my name's Rick Lazier. I own the property on the west side of 4th Street, if you'll look on your picture there. I have a lease with Action Pest Control. That lease will be coming up due in about 3 more years. I see the closing of this street affecting my lease. That puts my building one-way traffic to the north. My problem with that is Voorhees is already too busy, too narrow, that needs to be widened and all that. So I don't think we need to defer traffic from where we're at now back north, and with Kevin in his situation having to go all the way around the block to enter the front of his business. Basically, both of those businesses face 4th Street. So if you close that, that's going to be an inconvenience. The people at Action Pest Control run anywhere from 5 to 7 vehicles daily. They go in and out of the building 2 to 3 times a day with chemicals and stuff. So you can do the calculation there of what we're looking at traffic-wise just from my one building. Imagine how much going in and out of the body shop. So, yes, I prefer that the street not be closed to protect my business and my future leases. That property was acquired through the Department of Redevelopment. City of Terre Haute came to me and said, we have this piece of property. Can you do something with it? I sat down, designed it, went to Dan Sanders and Associates. We built a building. We took a piece of vacant property. We put it on the tax roll. And that's been a plus for me, for the city of Terre Haute. So, yes, closing that is a very inconvenience to my business. I own approximately 30 pieces of commercial real estate in Terre Haute. So me saying that, yes, it does affect me personally. So I'm not interested in that street being closed. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody make a comment?
Yes, I just thought...
Just state your name. If you
my name is Kevin Caldwell, so I own Berger Chrysler Jeep. I also live in Terre Haute. I have a feeling I'm probably the only person in this room that was present during, you know, for the accident. I worked in the back of that building starting in about 1981. You know, my family's had that business for a long time, so I'm intimately familiar with that area and the crossing. By the way, if you haven't figured out, 4th Street does not actually cross the railroad tracks. It actually hits Preston before you go over the railroad tracks. So I was there for the accident, if you have any questions about that. With my family's business, we know of no accidents at that intersection in the time we have had that business. So I'm not saying there's not, but I'm pretty sure there haven't been. And Mr. Densworth, I think, is misguided in his estimation of the traffic count. And it's not just my customer's traffic count, although I will tell you in practicality, when I have a customer that says, where's the collision center? I walk them to the door and I said, you see the TAM building over there? You just go over the railroad tracks, you turn left. Okay? So the railroad tracks are marked by a telephone pole about 150 feet in front of the railroad tracks and then the stationary cross sign. You have a lot of people from Applebee's that pull out of the back of their parking lot. If you've ever eaten at Applebee's and gone over the railroad tracks, that intersection is no better. So I guess you would have to close their exit in Preston to solidify that one. So closing 4th Street had nothing to do with this accident. And the other thing is, when we first met after this accident, and we did talk back in the time frame, I'll agree that Mr. Densworth said, the first thing they said is, look, this accident highlighted this intersection. So had it not been for my friend and vendor running into a stopped train due to his inattention, we wouldn't be here tonight. So is there a safety concern? I don't think so. I'm familiar with safety. I'm familiar with some public safety stuff, being a former pilot, Air Force pilot. I've driven over those tracks many times, and it's not just for the public. I'll admit we use that. We drive vehicles from our collision center to the service center, which is on Preston. We drive vehicles back the other way. Upwards of, I'm going to guess, between 5 and 15 times a day. So when I pay my employees hourly and they're only getting paid for the time they're working, driving around the block, which it seems 30 seconds because it's one, two, three stop signs and then another left turn, takes time out of their day. And when you start adding that up over a year, it takes money out of their pocket mainly. So, but I just thought I would offer my perspective since I'm the only one that was actually at the accident. I was at all the meetings. I was here before when this was presented. So if you had any questions, I thought I would at least offer that.
Thank you. Council?
President Crossman, I just wanted to remind everyone this is the second reading, so you will not need to take a vote tonight to vote.
Madam President.
Councilperson Nation.
So we can reach some resolution on this one way or another, I move for approval of this ordinance.
Second.
This has been moved by Councilperson Nation that we approve Special Ordinance 28-2018. It has been seconded by Councilperson Garrison. All in favor say aye.
Roll call.
Roll call, Michelle.
Councilperson Aller.
No.
Councilperson Azar.
No.
Councilperson DeBond.
No.
Councilperson Elliott.
No.
Councilperson Garrison.
No.
Councilperson Morris.
No.
Councilperson Nasser.
No.
Councilperson Nation?
No.
Councilperson Crossan?
No. The vote was 9-0?
Yes.
Against this, so the motion does not pass.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
Next agenda item, Michelle, tax abatements for confirmation?
There are none.
Items on second reading?
Special Ordinance 41-2018. Authorizing a tax anticipation warrant loan.
Madam President, members of the council, I don't have anything to add from last week. I'm sure you still have your handout. If you had any questions, I'd be happy to answer that, but I'm just asking for your approval tonight so we can move forward and get this taken care of. So that's all I have on that.
Is there any member of the public who would like to comment on Special Ordinance 41-2018?
Yes, I would. On the public safety part of it, again, my name is Donald Hyde. I had a week to think about what you said, Mr. Mayor, and I have to agree with some of what you said. However, with that said, I've got another further thing to say to the City Council and you. Have we done any study? I mean, we went to the county paid $100,000 to have a study for this prison that none of us got to see. You're in charge of the police department at Terre Haute and their safety. I'd like to know, and you're also in charge of the safety of the entire city of Terre Haute when it comes to nighttime driving. You said you haven't closed any lights. You know what? I'll believe you. I'll believe you. But there's two things you're leaving out of the equation. One, you haven't done anything about the ones that were turned off before, making it darker than it currently once was. Now, point my of lights, order. My eyes,
excuse
my...
Excuse me, Mr. Hyde, you have a point of order.
Aren't we talking about a tax anticipation warrant?
Yes, we are.
Then I stand... I will end it here, then. I thought you were talking about the safety thing, that the one that was talked about, and you were waiting for a safety issue.
No, we're not, but thank
okay,
you.
Okay, thank you. Then. I'll say that.
Thank you. Is there any other member of the public who would like to speak on the tax anticipation warrant? Council?
Madam President?
Yes.
If there are no questions or further discussion, I move to approve Special Ordinance 41-2018 as presented.
Second.
Has been moved by Councilperson Garrison and seconded by Councilperson Nasser that we approve Special Ordinance 41-2018. Roll call, please, Michelle.
Councilperson Aller.
Yes.
Councilperson Azar.
Yes.
Councilperson DeBond.
Yes.
Councilperson Elliott.
Yes.
Councilperson Garrison.
Yes.
Councilperson Morris.
Yes.
Councilperson Nasser.
Yes.
Councilperson Nation.
No.
Councilperson Crossan.
No.
That's 7 yes, 2 no.
Thank you.
The vote being 7 yes, 2 no's, so the ordinance, special ordinance passes. Next item, please.
As a reminder, President cost appropriations 23 through 30. This is the first reading, so you will need a vote to take action. Yes. Appropriation 23, 2018, $3,287,182.70 from CDBG Fund Redevelopment number 0406 to 0052. To Office Manager number 412020 for $33,623.14. To Finance Administrator number 412078 for $38,858.84. To Real Estate Administrator number 412148 for $69,759.90. To Redevelopment Specialist number 412150 for $39,534.90. To Employer Social Security number 413010 for $11,270.16. To Employer Medicare number 413020 for $2,635.76. To Administrative Cost number 413131 for $58,000. To Office Supplies number 421010 for $3,000. To Gasoline number 422010 for $1,000. To Services Contractual number 432010 for $3,020,000. To Legal Services number 432010 for $2,000. To Postage number 433020 for $500. To Travel number 433030 for $3,000. To Printing number 434010 for $1,500. And to Subscriptions and Dues 439185 for $2,500.
Could you repeat that, Michelle?
I was going to say I think she has potential as a career as an auctioneer, but
I think so.
Thanks, Michelle.
Petitioner.
Madam President and members of the Council, I'm Leslie Ellis, the City Controller. I'm here with Steve Witt from Redevelopment. I'm here to answer any project questions you may have. The State Board of Accounts requested that the Department of Redevelopment bring their budgets to the City Council to be appropriated through you all each year. So these are appropriations for their various funds. That would be Appropriation 23 through Appropriation Number 29. And for the budget in 2020, they'll be included in the regular budget packet that we bring to you all. So we're just getting them caught up for 2019. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Steve, did you want to comment on this at this point? Or?
This is somewhat new to us. Just in recent times, the State Board of Accounts has asked us to do that. But Phil Kessner from our department and Cindy Chandler, our bookkeeper, along with Leslie, worked very diligently to put this together for you. I think everyone knows about our department, but just a brief overview. Like, for example, Appropriation 23, that is in regard to our Federal Community Development Block Grant dollars. And Terre Haute is considered an entitlement community by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. So we receive a federal block grant every year. And that's the primary reason the department exists, is because of those funds. And our funding at the federal level has actually gone down over the years. From when I was at redevelopment starting in the early 2000s to now, it's gone down probably $1 million or more. And even had gone down more, you know, prior to that. But we do what we can with our monies. So this pays for our infrastructure work, streets, curbs, sidewalks, things of that nature, in strictly in low and moderate income neighborhoods. And we work very closely with the City Engineering Department in the administration of these funds as well. Right now we're kind of working in an area north of Holman and east of 13th Street, down in that area. And we've been in many neighborhoods throughout the city for decades. But that's primarily what that appropriation is for. And we can run through the rest of them real quickly or do them one at a time, however you would prefer. Or do nothing, which I would prefer.
I'd say if it's okay from a process point of view that we go.
You can discuss them all discuss at the same them. Time, but we'll still have to officially.
We'll just have to vote on them separately. But if you want to go ahead and discuss matters in the other ones, let's
sure.
do it.
You mean each appropriation?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So in regard to Appropriation 24, those are our home funds. Those are the funds we use. We work with a lot of not-for-profit housing groups throughout the city. And Phil could speak more to this than I could, we work very closely with a number of groups, and we provide matching funds for projects to to build new housing, usually multifamily. Sometimes it's single family, I believe, periodically. But, that's pretty much what the home funds are for. We have Appropriation 25 is our non-federal income funds. These are funds where we may receive properties in that we have a lien against them, where we've done demolition work or something of that nature. Once somebody will pay us back for that demolition because we'll put a lien against the property, that's an example of some of the funds that go into the non-federal fund account. And then on the balance are our five TIF districts. We refer to them as the number in which they were created. So TIF 1 is our downtown TIF area. That was created in the late 1980s. Just as a little background, as everyone will, it's before my time. But when First Financial Bank built their downtown office building, the powers in charge at that time thought it would be a good idea to create a tax increment finance area. It was used to build our original downtown parking garage. And since then, it's been used to build all sorts of infrastructure and assist with projects, Center City, the two hotels, just numerous things throughout the downtown. Fort Harrison Business Park is TIF number 8. That is up just north of Ampasset, north of Steelton Road. That is our thing we have going up there is our new company, Purelex, that's building their new manufacturing facility in that TIF area. So it doesn't generate a lot of money anymore, or we don't need a lot of money because the debt service on the bonds have been paid prior to Purelex coming along. We will have bond payments going forward out of that TIF area. We also hope to do some other infrastructure work up there in the future. Kind of the same thing with the JAGCOR TIF area number 9. We paid off the debt service on existing bonds there a year or two ago. That's generating a little money that is available for some miscellaneous infrastructure in that area should we decide to do so. And then the final one is the State Road 46 TIF area, TIF number 10. I think that TIF area speaks for itself. It was started with the construction of the East Walmart, obviously. Done a tremendous amount of infrastructure work out there. Most recently, we provided matching funds to a nearly $1 million NDOT grant, which Rachel Leslie was very instrumental in helping us obtain. And that built, and through work of the city engineering office, very simple in concept, taking water from the east side of 46 to the west side, but very complicated in execution. But that was a nearly $2 million project that was completed. The next thing we're looking at is a new water line that will go from around the Stratford Hills area to about the Tribune Star printing plant, and that will increase pressure and volume of water available in that area. So that's pretty much it in a nutshell. We're a small department. We have 4 1/3 employees on the third, but we've gone down from 7, so we're trying to save money and do more with less, and that's what we do.
Thank you. Is there anyone from the public who would like to comment on Appropriation 23, 2018?
I'll be real quick this time. The only question I have to ask the gentleman is, I've never heard of you. You don't advertise or communicate enough of what you do to the taxpayers of the city or the county and the public at large. I really think you need to improve your communication skills and tell us what this is all about. And by the way, from what you said, I'm not saying this is a negative. I think it's a positive. And that's really puzzling me why you do not communicate more of what you're doing.
I'd like to give Steve the opportunity to comment on this, but I would just say that I believe redevelopment things are covered in the newspaper and in other media on a very regular basis, that we discuss their projects here, both with their staff and with the mayor's office and other departments. Chuck Innes is often here on a redevelopment project as well. So I would just disagree with Mr. Hyde on that. But all of us, of course, can improve our communication. There's no question about that. But I'd like to stand up for the department in that regard. Mr. Mayor?
Can I just do that quickly, too? You know, Steve's been involved with economic development for a very long time. He's in charge of the County Redevelopment Commission. He's president of the Terre Haute EDC. And then we brought him in to fill in the position when we had a retiree in the department for an executive director. So, one, it's saving us money, and he brings a tremendous amount of expertise. We do communicate about all these projects on a regular basis, and they just sometimes they don't get a lot of the maybe the front page kind of stories, but we'll continue to work hard on that. But I couldn't be any more proud of that department and Steve's leadership there.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Steve, I'll give you
The other thing I would add is the Redevelopment Commission meets the third Monday of every month. Third floor City Hall, 4 p.m., and you're always welcome to attend. As the mayor said, our projects don't oftentimes aren't in the limelight, but we do think we do important work, particularly in regard to the low and moderate income parts of our community and our constituency. A lot of times the projects we do in the tax increment finance areas and so forth may receive a little more notoriety, but we're most proud of what we do for our low and moderate income residents of the community.
Michelle, I just have a question for you and perhaps for Eddie. Is it possible to take action on any of these appropriations we need to vote tonight because it's on first reading? Is it possible for us to do a single motion to vote and then to vote on them separately?
I call it the George special.
The George special. Okay, thank you. I just wanted to clarify that before we go forward. And I would give the opportunity now for discussion within the council, but if someone would like to make a motion on a vote to vote, I would entertain that. Councilperson Oller.
I'll make a motion to vote on appropriation 23 through appropriation 30.
Second, 29.
29.
Well, we can do it through
32.
You're going to
it's
do clerk's document?
Michelle's.
Yeah, it's a different one, but it can be.
Oh, okay. All right. Sorry.
We have a motion by Councilperson Oller, and I believe the second was by Councilperson Nation, to proceed tonight to vote on appropriations 23 through 30. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And opposed, same sign. Motion passes.
Madam President.
Yes.
First, Steve, thank you for the good work that you do. And although this is a confusing set of paperwork that you presented us with or that you're required to present us with, I understand the work of your office and I understand what you're bringing to us and why you're asking us to do it. One question is, and it's either for you or Leslie or both, how will this change next year so that we avoid the situation that we're in right now?
That's a great question. Glad you asked it. And also, I have prepared these in a format that I think would be easier for you. And once you approve these, I can email those to you. And it's the same format of our other budgets. So you can just print it, put three hole punches in it, and stick it in your binder that I gave you, and it'll be set for 2019. So next year, when I start the budgets for 2020, which is usually May, I will send them spreadsheets. They will complete them like all the other departments, and they'll be combined in the same packet.
Great.
So when I give you the budget packet, it will be in there. But once these are approved, I can add them to the budget packet for 2019. So I will email those to you.
That's great, and thank you. That's when I first saw this, I thought, surely this is all just a symptom of the changing rules and the changing way that redevelopment is required to do your budget now. That's right, isn't it?
Correct.
One other just thing that I did with all of this paperwork is I went through it and separated out your services contractual numbers, which are the numbers that you actually use for projects, from the totals, and came up with the difference, which The punchline is, it looks like you administer between $12 and $13 million of, or you will administer this year between $12 and $13 million to try to get all this stuff done between the TIF and the home funds and everything else. Mm-hmm. And by my reckoning, the administration for that $12.6 million is costing less than 4%. That's 3.75%, or $423,000 for your staff, gasoline, paper clips, everything. To me, for the work that the Department of Redevelopment does for the city of Terre Haute, that's a remarkable value. So I'm proud to support this and speed it through and make this easy for all of you. And on that note, if there is no further discussion, I move approval. I don't know, can I do a George special on approval?
No,
I move approval of appropriation number 23-2018.
Second. Discussion. Okay. I just had one follow-up question regarding the State Board of Accounts. Was that isolated? I know the answer to this, but I just want the public to know. That was an isolated incident for Terre Haute. The whole state has to do budgets and so forth with the redevelopments, correct?
As far as I know, they do. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. I yield.
It's been moved by Councilperson Nation and seconded by Councilperson Nassar. The approval of Appropriation 23-2018. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes. So Appropriation 24-2018. Michelle? I stole a little bit of your thunder there, didn't I?
Yes, you did. Appropriation 24-2018, $1,195,745.03 from Home Program Fund Redevelopment Number 0296-0046 to Office Manager Number 412020 for $5,200 to Finance Administrator Number 412078 for $5,000 to Redevelopment Specialist Number 412150 for $10,000 to Employer Social Security Number 413010 for $1,252.40 to Employer Medicare Number 413020 for $292.90 to Administrative Costs Number 413131 for $4,000 and the Services Contractual Number 432010 for $1,030,000 and to Civic Promotions Number 439186 for $140,000.
Do the commissioners have any further comment on this appropriation? Anyone from the public have a comment on Appropriation 24-2018? Council?
Madam President?
Yes, Councilman Nason.
If there's no other questions or comments, I make a motion we approve Appropriation 24-2018.
Second.
It has been moved by Councilperson Nassar and seconded by Councilperson Morris that we approve Appropriation 24-2018. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
Nassar, go ahead.
Michelle, I'm excited.
Appropriation 25-2018, $244,254.50 from Non-Federal Income Fund Redevelopment Number 02950045 for Office Manager 412020 for $1,000 to Finance Administrator Number 412078 for $1,000 to Redevelopment Specialist Number 412150 for $1,000 to Employer Social Security Number 413010 for $186 to Employer Medicare Number 413020 for $43.50 to Administrative Costs Number 413131 for $1,025 and to Services Contractual Number 432010 for $240,000.
Any further comments, Steve or Leslie, on the Appropriation 25? Any comments from the public on Appropriation 25? Council?
Madam President,
yes.
I move approval of Appropriation 25-2018 as presented.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilperson Garrison and seconded by Councilperson Aller that we approve Appropriation 25-2018. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Next item of business.
Appropriation 26-2018, $5,216,918 from Central Business District TIF Number 1, Redevelopment Number 04710053 to Finance Administrator 412078. For $4,000 to Redevelopment Specialist Number 412150 for $8,000 to Employer Social Security Number 413010 for $744 to Employer Medicare Number 413020 for $174 to Administrative Cost Number 413131 for $4,000 and to Services Contractual Number 432010 for $5,200,000.
Steve or Leslie, any further comment on this appropriation?
I would just add one thing very quickly. Streetlights were mentioned earlier. You may have noticed primarily on Ohio Boulevard or Ohio Street and some of the cross streets that we have some new decorative lights. And Phil spearheaded that project and worked closely with the city engineering department. Is there 26 new lights. So we like those. We hope you like them too. And that's a good example of a nice little TIF project we did.
Thank you.
Any public comment on appropriation 26-2018? Council?
Madam President?
Councilperson Aller.
If there's no further questions, I move that we approve appropriation 26-2018 as presented.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilperson Aller and seconded by Councilperson Elliott that we approve appropriation 26-2018. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Next item of business.
Appropriation 27-2018, $230,000 from Fort Harrison Business Park, TIF number 8, redevelopment number 04070095, services contractual number 432010.
The only thing I quickly add there is, as I mentioned earlier, the most recent project we've done there is in conjunction with our Purelex USA project, and that's rail improvements. So if you're up there, you can see their new rail siding and also a new crossing on Steelton. So the folks that live up on the hill hopefully are enjoying that new crossing because it's benefiting them as well as the new company.
Thank you. Any comments from the public on appropriation 27-2018? Council?
Madam President?
Yes.
There are no further questions. I move to approve appropriation 27-2018.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilperson Garrison and seconded by Councilperson Morris that we approve appropriation 27-2018. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Next item of business.
Appropriation 28-2018, $210,000 from JADCOR TIF number 9, redevelopment number 04090000, the services contractual number 432010.
Any comments? Anyone from the public wish to comment on appropriation 28-2018? Council?
Madam President, I make a motion to approve appropriation 28-2018 as presented.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilperson Garrison and seconded by Councilperson DeBond that we approve appropriation 28-2018. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Next item of business.
Appropriation 29-2018, $2,219,171 from State Road 46, TIF number 10, redevelopment number 04100000 to Finance Administrator number 412078 for $4,000 to Redevelopment Specialist number 412150 for $10,000 to Employer Social Security number 413010 for $868 to Employer Medicare number 413020 for $203 to Administrative Cost number 413131 for $4,100 into services contractual number 432010 for $2,200,000.
Just the only thing I'd add here, council members, you may have heard recently talk about a new incentive called Opportunity Zones, and a significant portion of the State Road 46 TIF area is within one of our Opportunity Zones that we were recently awarded. And again, Rachel Leslie helped us in submitting the application for 4 opportunity zones in the community.
Okay. Anyone from the public wish to comment on appropriation 29-2018? Council?
Steve, unrelated question, but last year there were 3, 4, maybe 5 business expansion or new businesses that council needed to take action on from abatement-wise or rezoning or other reasons. Are all those going well as far as you know? I mean,
I think we're still waiting on GATX to get the final go-ahead from their upper management on their project, but all the rest are moving forward. I get them kind of mixed up on which one's in the city and which one's in the county, but certainly the Purelex project is one. Everyone else that I think has come to the council for abatement applications or whatever are doing well. And then we also have other projects that have involved redevelopment in the council, such as the Riverfront Lofts development, which, you know, we're just thrilled about. The new Silver Birch Assisted Housing Project just right beside Lafayette Avenue north of ISU. That's another one that we worked with in unison. So, yes, I would say everything's proceeding along, Earl.
So these new ones are expansions. They haven't started hiring yet?
Correct. Like with Purelex, for example, they said it would take them about 18 months to construct their facility. Okay. So they actually have hired a plant manager and or a CEO, and are looking for a COO. So they are getting some of their managerial folks going. But to go along with that, we have so many businesses, large and small, throughout the community that they have so many job openings. And, you know, the issue is skill levels. You know, the folks that have the skills are in demand, they already have jobs. And we work very closely with the Work One office and Lisa Lee and Mike Smith and Ivy Tech and all of our universities and so on. But that's not unusual for our community. Every community is going through that. But there are a lot of job openings out there, absolutely. And then while we're on the topic, I'll just add that tomorrow at 11 a.m., Governor Holcomb is coming in to our former Pfizer facility for a formal announcement with officials from Saturn Pet Care about their new project. And you're all invited if you'd like to attend. It's $39 million and 200 new jobs. And so I think we're doing well, you know, on the job creation and retention front.
Thank you. Yield.
Madam President.
Yes.
Steve, this one's on the State Road 46 TIF. And it's, as you said earlier, it's doing well. There's been a lot of development out there. There's a lot of money in that TIF district. I'm now that we've got the Margaret Avenue overpass finished, I'm particularly interested in seeing the rest of Margaret Avenue finished so that it can tie into State Road 46. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us what the Department of Redevelopment is doing to make that happen?
Well, I think I would defer to the mayor on that. Or Chuck, we stand at the ready to help, you know, in regard to financial assistance and things of that nature. What we try to do, if possible, is accumulate funds so we don't have to issue bonds. So I mentioned our water project earlier. When we're ready to go to construction with that project, we still have to design and get right-of-way and all that sort of thing or get easements. But we'll have the money accumulated to pay basically cash for that project. But the mayor could speak to Margaret Avenue overall better than I could.
And I'll just be brief, but that's exactly right. I mean, that's kind of been the process that redevelopment has used, is kind of do a project and design the next one but save some cash in order to do that. We spent quite a bit on that drainage project. And then Steve's been wanting to do that water line because there's really low water pressure out there for additional growth. And so that's kind of next on the list. So what will happen is design will take place of the next section going west. And then we've got to do our part kind of from 25th Street to Fruit Ridge. So we really want the TIF district to kind of take it all the way to Fruit Ridge. And then we want to do a city project from 25th to Fruit Ridge coming back this way. We've not designed either one of those yet.
It's my understanding that TIF funds can be used outside of the TIF district for areas that serve the TIF district.
Yes, that's correct.
Can't we just use TIF funds to go all the way to 25th Street?
Well, we could. We just haven't got that far yet to really do the design and do the cost estimate, but that is absolutely an option. There may be some other things that come out there that we need some of the funds for, too. Right today, we don't have specific projects other than what Steve mentioned, but more things that come generate more revenue, and we have some significant opportunities coming up that might really add to that TIF district bottom line.
Thank you. Are you?
Unless Phil, did you Phil want to comment on this?
I want to add to what they're saying. In the waterline design, we went ahead and did awarded a contract to do 30% of the road design all the way to Fruit Ridge Avenue, because we want to make sure we had the right-of-way acquired, that there weren't any utility conflicts or elevation changes. We're doing a partial drainage plan so that we're looking at the future as we design not only the water line but the roadway. So, my name is Phil Kessler. I'm with the Department of Redevelopment.
Thank you, Phil.
And Phil, based on your understanding of the timeline for these things, how long until that's actually in the ground and done?
We're hoping to get the water line done within the next year.
And back to my original question about Margaret Avenue, when can we expect to see Margaret Avenue all put together from 25th to 46?
That depends on the funding level that comes from the federal. It required a bond issue that the TIF district could only cover a portion of that, but we're at least trying to design the road improvements all the way to Fruit Ridge Avenue to benefit the TIF district.
Right.
If I was to guess, I would say about 3 years to complete everything.
About 3 years to complete everything. Okay, that's a time frame that I can work with.
I think it's doable, but things can happen.
With quote marks around it. Okay, thank you. I yield for good now.
Can I just say one more thing, Martha? We have a little staff that's a tremendous staff. Everyone knows Dean Branson, our real estate administrator. He's been with the department since 1980. Built in the department since 82. Cindy Candler, almost as long. One of the proudest things that I've done since being with redevelopment, my first stint was hiring our administrative assistant, Penny Hall, and that was like 2002. So they're very dedicated staff. They're all in. We kind of tease each other about Dean. It's like, we hope he can hang on as long as he can. But they're great staff, and I'm just very pleased to work with them, and I think we're fortunate as a community to have them.
Thank you.
Madam President.
Yes.
It's great discussions. I move to approve Appropriation 29, 2018, as presented.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilperson Harrison and seconded by Councilperson Devon that we approve Appropriation 29, 2018. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Next item of business.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
Appropriation 30, 2018, $51,734.59 from Clerk's Document Perpetuation Non-Reverting Fund, number 0236, to Deputy Clerk, salary number 412015 for $33,584, to Employer Group Health number 413030 for $11,300, to Employer Dental number 413040 for $340, Social Security number 413010 for $2,082.21, to Medicare number 413020 for $486.97, to PERF number 413060 for $3,761.41, to Life Insurance number 413050 for $180.
And having said all that, Michelle, would you like to speak to this appropriation?
No, I've used up all of my discussion. Michelle Edwards, City Clerk, I had approached the council last year in 2018 to create two part-time positions in our non-reverting fund. State statutes allow us to collect a non-reverting a fee that goes into our non-reverting fund. That worked out very well. Very appreciative to the council for letting us do that. We're ready to move on to phase two. We have went paperless in the court system, so we have a lot of time that we no longer have to spend creating all of the files, and now I would like to move on to council projects. So what I would like to ask the council to do is to remove the two part-time positions. They're not filled currently, and allow me to have one full-time position, and this person would have the joy of spending quality time with all of the council members at these meetings and helping me behind the scenes with legal advertisements, minutes, agendas. And they would also work on city ordinances. That's a small volume of our caseload, but it does take quite a bit of time to prepare all the cases and everything, and that would free up some of the other duties that the others are doing. Happy to answer any questions.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to comment on Appropriation 30, 2018? Council?
Madam President, in hopes of getting along with our new city clerk's assistant who will be assisting the city council
It's my pleasure to make a motion to approve Appropriation 30, 2018 as presented.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilperson Garrison and seconded by Councilperson Nassar that we approve Appropriation 30, 2018. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Next item of business.
Special Ordinance 40, 2018, vacating a portion of 8th Street located between Cherry Street to the north and Wabash Avenue to the south. No problems were noted. And again, this is an item on first reading. And thank you, council people, council individuals.
Petitioner?
Madam President, members of the council, my name is Ted Nolte, and I'm an attorney at Kroger Gardas and Regas, and we represent the Big Oak County Capital Board of Improvement, and are here on behalf of the petitioner, Fontenet Holdings, LLC. And the petition in front of you is to vacate a portion of 8th Street between Cherry Street to the north and Wabash Avenue to the south. And this, in particular, is to enable the construction of the proposed convention center to be built by the Vigo County Capital Improvement Board. There are only two property owners that have adjacent properties to these streets, Fontenet Holdings and Terre Haute Hotel Partners, LLC. As part of the petition, we have attached consents from both of the property owners. In addition, as part of the petition, we have submitted a rather lengthy traffic impact study as to what will happen upon the vacation of 8th Street, prepared by the Nations Group and A&F Engineering, who are actually here today and can comment on this proposed traffic study, as well as the proposed footprint for the construction of the convention center. We have there's a necessity of moving this forward as quickly as possible, so we would ask the council if they would take up consideration of this proposal immediately. So if there's any questions, I'll turn it over to Mr. Bauer from Nations Group.
Is there any member of the public who would like to comment on Special Ordinance 40, 2018?
Again, Donald Hyde, 1411 Poplar Street. It's one thing to close a minor road or keep it open. It's another thing to close one of the major streets in our city. Historically, it's always been there. It's always been used. In fact, it was once a two-way street, and the council long ago said, well, we'll make it a one-way street to help with traffic. Now you decide you're going to close one block of it. So you're creating another situation like in Bloomington, like in Indianapolis, like in some of the bigger cities when we're not a big city, where you're again blocking the ability to slowly move around the city. Now, I have a question, and I'd like to have these people answer it. I'm assuming, because of the way we've designed Highway 40 by having Cherry Street become the way you get to the bridge to go on west, and Ohio Street to be the way you get from the west to the east and bypass all of the stuff we did at this courthouse. Now, if you close down a main street between Wabash and Cherry Street, does that mean you're going to keep Cherry Street open so that those cars can still go turn on 9th Street and go up to get further west? Eastward, are they going to come down and it's going to stay the same? I think, and I'm not saying I'm against it, I'm not saying I'm for it, but I say that we ought to ask a lot of questions and make sure we all know the answers. Because I do believe that there's going to be a big traffic flow change, just as the traffic flow changed when we closed down Wabash Avenue years ago. And we moved over and took everything to Cherry Street. It caused a major change. And people finally have gotten used to that. Now we're going to have another major change. Again, I just got questions. I hope I hear the answers to. Thank you.
Are there any other comments from members of the public?
Hi. Jimmy Jeffers, live at 2120 North 7th Street. Some of you know how I think about giving up city streets. We've been here before. For 26 years, I've worked at 30 North 8th Street, and that's the building we're talking about. So I parked. Most of the time now I park in the parking garage, ISU parking garage, or Alpha Park across the street. I'm keenly aware of the traffic flow at 8th and Cherry, probably more so than about anybody in this room. The articles in the paper, it's kind of dismissed as, this is nothing. We'll just move the cars. It's really easy. It's not that easy. And I have read some of the study. It is quite lengthy. I find some of it kind of interesting. It gives the current, I'm on page 7 and 8. It gives, page 7 gives the current count of the flow of traffic on 7th Street, 8th Street, Cherry Street, documents when they turn, when they go straight, all of this. I guess I have one question. How was this count taken? Okay, because I go to that building every day. I drive in and out multiple times a day, and I don't ever recall seeing anybody. I don't remember seeing the things on the street or people sitting in lawn chairs as they did when they counted North 7th Street. There were places where people sat in lawn chairs and counted which way they go, and I don't remember seeing any of that, so that was just my question. But anyway, now if you go to the count of what happens after, the assumption is that all the traffic from 8th Street will go to 7th Street. That may or may not be a valid assumption, but it's not a big deal. If you go now to what happens after you go to 7th, after all the traffic from 8th Street goes to 7th Street, before the change in the afternoon busy time, there were 274 cars that went from Cherry to Wabash. And six of those turned left. No, I take that back. 20 or 67 of them turned left. Okay, after the change, the 274 becomes 574. So we're doubling the flow, more than doubling the flow. And the turns from going south on 7th to turning east on Wabash goes from 67 turns to 535. That's five times the flow. And some of you people that have business experience downtown may recognize that there's often traffic, as it is now, the traffic going south on 7th may not, all the cars waiting may not make the turn. So now you're going to five times that at some points of the daytime. I think you're kind of getting potentially a gridlock situation here. And when you analyze all these numbers, the assumption is that everybody going south on 8th will now turn and go west one block and south one block and east one block. I don't actually think that'll happen. I think there'll be all kinds of changes to the traffic pattern. One of them might be that a significant part of these people will decide, well, if I got to play that game, I'll just come down 7th Street. Well, now you're putting a burden on 7th Street going through ISU where there's a lot of pedestrian traffic and everything else. So I think these are all things that need to be considered. If you go back a lot farther in the study, it gives you some summaries of volume of 8th Street. And I'm way at the back. I don't know what page I'm on. But there's a count that basically took place for a 24-hour period on September 25th to 26th, like middle of the afternoon to middle of the afternoon the next day. And there are 3,170 vehicles went down 8th Street in that time. And if you put that with the number that already is on 7th Street for that time, which is 6,249, now you got 10,000 cars a day going down 7th Street through downtown Terre Haute. I think that's very significant. I don't think you can just dismiss this as, well, it's no big deal. These cars will just go over to 7th Street. It's not that simple. This is a major change in traffic flow, and I think it should be considered. And the other thing, one other comment that the gentleman just made that pointed out that there is only two property owners that own property on either side of 8th Street in this block. Well, that's true, but there's 10,000 people driving their car up and down that street, and that street belongs to everybody in Terre Haute, and I don't think it should be dismissed that easily that we should just close this road. It's different than when you close a road for a not-for-profit hospital than it is when you close a road for a for-profit business venture by arguably the wealthiest man in the county. I don't think it should be treated casually, and that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other comments from the public? Yes. Would you like to respond to the questions that were raised by the public?
Madam President, members of the council, Steve Bauer, Nations Group. My address is 7144 East Stetson, Scottsdale, Arizona. Here on behalf of the Vigo County Capital Improvements Board, Fontenet Holdings, and the Terre Haute Hotel Group. The beautiful thing about engineering, and there will be an impact with the closure of 8, the beautiful thing about engineering is there are tested methods that analyze these things, and there are certain grades that are given. I've got Matt Brown from ANF Engineering who actually did the traffic counts and prepared the study, and he'll come up and address the engineering specifics of what was found. But the most significant result from this traffic study is that they give you a grade with regard to level of service, A, B, C, D, or F. There is only one instance in this entire study that is an F service, and that's exiting the Convention Center parking garage onto Cherry during a major event. We can address that through the operator of this facility. All other intersections, all other roadways operate at either an A, B, or C operation. And as your city engineer will tell you, that is more than an acceptable level of operation. This application was brought before you, not just for a private business venture. This is a culmination of a number of years of effort to locate what is going to be a project of local and regional significance, the Terre Haute Convention Center. As a part of that convention center, and there was an economic impact study done years ago that basically said, if you do a convention center somewhere in downtown Terre Haute, what do you need in order to make that operate? And the one overriding factor was you have two hotels in downtown Terre Haute, you need a third. And so this project does benefit that third hotel, but moreover, that hotel is a linchpin to the success of the Terre Haute Convention Center. So when this property was chosen for the location of the convention center, it is a requirement that we assemble properties on either side of 8th Street as well as further at the southwest corner of 9th and Cherry in order to make the convention center work. So with that, this is an extremely important application for the city, for the county, and for the region. I'd like to have Mr. Brown come up and address the specific traffic issues that the council or the citizens may have.
Thank you. Mr. Brown, if you want to come ahead and do that, I think it would be instructive to us.
Good evening. For the record, my name is Matt Brown. I'm with ANF Engineering. Our offices are at 8365 Keystone Crossing in Indianapolis. Real quick, I just want to hit on the question that was asked. As far as the segment counts that he referred to when he was talking about the 8,000, 3,000, those were done via either pneumatic road tubes. You've probably seen them out there where they put the counter on the side of the road and they put the tube down the road, and every time the axle hits it, it counts it. Those were generally done with that, but we also use in conjunction with doing our intersection counts. We have sat people out there before, and they sit in a lawn chair and do all that. But we also have a technology called MyoVision technology, and these are small cameras about that big. They go up either strapped to a signal pole or strapped to a street sign, and they constantly record video. This video is then shipped off to Canada, and they process it through a computer, and then they send you back the counts. We've done verification on their technologies, and they are more accurate than anybody sitting out in a lawn chair, I can assure you. So we have 16 of these cameras. We just deploy them everywhere. We've done counts with them for the Indianapolis MPO, for NDOT. So they just are a very nice technology to not have to sit somebody out in the middle of a street or on a curb very safe technology. So with that said, I think Steve pretty much summarized everything our study says. I think the highlight of our study is the fact that all of the study intersections either operate at level service A or B. When you look at an overall intersection today, those intersections remain A or B after the closure. So nobody can deny that there's not going to be some shift of traffic flow, but I would argue that the capacity is there on the adjacent intersections to handle that additional flow. And as the gentleman stated, I think in the PM peak hour, you're talking about 280 vehicles. That's the most diversion you're going to have. And you could probably argue that some may not even all go right and go south on 7th. If they don't all do that, it probably helps you out a little more because now it distributes even more across the network. So we looked at what I would think is a worst-case scenario by isolating it all and putting it all in one place, and we still get excellent levels of service that you just frankly don't see that often. So we're talking about level service A being less than 10 seconds of delay per vehicle and level service B being less than 20. That's really not heard of in urban areas too often. So I would say that being able to maintain those levels of service is really speaks volumes of really how the intersections can handle this traffic. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Is there anybody else in the public who hasn't commented who would like to comment?
Yes, I'd like to comment again and clarify one thing. You did not answer, nor did you even come close to explain to me and the public listening on the televisions that are going to be the public that uses downtown Terre Haute for business, for pleasure, for shopping, for whatever. You didn't clarify by simply saying, is Cherry Street going to be closed, for God's sakes? That's one. Two, you never explained, not one word was mentioned by either one of you, of why you need to close the street to build the hotel you want to build. Now, I'm not much on an expert in anything, but I'm both an artist and I've studied architecture. Am I pro? No. But I common sensely know what's going on. Why do you need to close that street? I heard no reason why that street needed to be closed at all, even for one block. Second of all, you never explained, is Chestnut Street, way it works in Terre Haute, and by the way, I'm offended by you people for another reason, and I really mean this, as a citizen of this community. We have an expert that lives in Arizona, for God's sakes. We have another expert that comes here from Indianapolis. Our traffic is in Terre Haute, Indiana, and people are going to drive these roads, whether we like it or not, that live in Terre Haute, Indiana, and we're going to have to keep driving these roads. Now, another word I want to mention to this thing, too, and again, I'm staying out of it. If you can prove and answer my questions right, I'm all for it. I really am. I'm not negative. But you have to answer questions. You mentioned there's not going to be any tracks, any flow. But what you didn't mention is in 3 years, when the building is built and we have the Hammond Center remodeled and they're going to have a function and this new, brand new, whatever thing is open and they have a function and they both have a function at one time and then they go home. And I've been to Hammond Center when it was popular and there was plenty of roads and it was a massive nightmare to get out of Hammond Center and travel home. Even at night, there was all kinds of traffic. Plus, you had to park blocks and blocks away because of finding a place to park your car. Now, when you rebuild this thing, are you going to build a couple more high-rise parking places to cover people's cars when they come down to go to this convention center? Are you going to build a couple more high-rise parking spots to take the coverage of all the stuff? Terre Haute, Indiana, and I've lived here all my life, the downtown part of Terre Haute, Indiana, is for the first time in 40 years actually getting bigger and better, and stores are reopening. There's going to be business downtown. That's going to cause traffic. Now you're going to add to the traffic this convention center, no problem with that. But you better have a way to get people to move in and out of that, and you better plan to have places to park. Because what made Terre Haute lose downtown Terre Haute? And I was around, old enough to understand everything I saw back then. You know, in 1970s, when they opened up the mall, they opened up the mall in 68 for one reason and one reason only. It was hard to park in downtown Terre Haute, and you know it. I can't believe you haven't remembered that. It has not changed. Now, they're going to plan to build this new thing in downtown Terre Haute, and I've not heard them tell
Let's
how they're going to cure
the... Let's let them answer your question.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam President, members of the council, to answer those questions in succession, Cherry Street is not proposed to be closed. That is the state highway, so we have not proposed to change Cherry Street in any way, shape, or form. This project, this vacation application, is not just for the hotel. It's for the convention center as well, which will then bring an additional hotel to downtown Terre Haute. The convention center spans, it's a 40,000 square foot footprint. It's going to go next to the existing Hilton Garden Inn. And given the size that the convention center needs to be in order to accommodate future events in downtown Terre Haute, we need 8th Street in order to span 8th Street with that building all the way up to very close to the existing Copper Bar. Copper Bar is remaining, as is the terminal building. With regard to Holman Center and this activity, we understand that there's going to be events that are going to occur at Holman Center, and there may be events that happen at the convention center as well. What our traffic study analyzed were existing traffic patterns. Did we analyze a specific night where Holman Center had an event? That I can't say. We'd have to look back at those records, and we're happy to do that. But again, with the level of service existing and proposed, and the level of service proposed is an analysis that says when you build this convention center, and oh, by the way, you probably get a new hotel, how do the adjacent streets and the adjacent intersections operate? They all operate at an acceptable level of service. If you throw the Holman Center activities into that, I would suspect, and we haven't analyzed that, but I would suspect they will still operate at an existing level of service that is satisfactory. With regard to parking, yes. The convention center, part of this project, is a new parking structure. Right now it is proposed for about 450 to 500 spaces. We are discussing the need for parking in downtown Terre Haute for the convention center and for other activities, including those at Holman Center, that may increase the number of parking spaces that the convention center builds. But in addition to that, part of the new hotel in the existing state office building project is going to build their own parking structure for not only the new hotel, but to serve the existing Hilton Garden Inn property, and that structure is going to be about 250 spaces. So at this stage, we're bringing approximately a minimum of approximately 650 to 700 spaces to the downtown area in these two blocks. I'd be glad to answer any questions. I think I answered all of his questions that he had.
Thank you, Mr. Barrett. Is there anyone else in the public who would like to speak on Special Ordinance 40? Okay. Council?
Madam President.
Yes, Mr. Mason.
Mr. Bauer, did I hear you right just within the last minute or two that you said that you have not analyzed the Holman Center traffic impact?
We have not analyzed the Holman Center traffic as it would relate to a Holman Center event. I don't know if we had counts, if we had the traffic counts out there. We worked with the city engineer to find appropriate days where we should count, that we are going to get the most realistic traffic volumes. And there was something going on. I think one street was closed for construction or something, so we actually pushed off our counts. But I do not know if we've analyzed it with a Holman Center event.
That's disappointing to me, and it kind of highlights one of the parts of this situation that is a disappointment. It looks to me like this is happening without an analysis of what will happen, of what impact it will have on ISU and their Holman Center facility. And that's been a concern of mine, but I didn't understand until now that the traffic study didn't even consider that. Another question about the traffic study, did it at all consider the possibility of two-way traffic on either 8th Street, 9th Street, or Cherry Street?
Madam President, Commissioner Nation, it did not because it's one-way traffic now. And so we analyzed the existing condition and presumed that that would be a future condition.
It is an existing condition. But the people who've served on this council for more than a couple of years will remember and understand that within this council, we've talked for a number of years about trying to turn Cherry Street to two-way traffic. We've also embarked on a program of turning our north-south one-way pairs back to two-way traffic. 4th Street and 5th Street have already been done, and that's happened within the last decade or so, and it was a positive thing. We're not talking about only downtown. We're talking about along their whole lengths, which the 4th Street and 5th Street lengths were not quite as far as the one-way traffic pair of 8th and 9th Street now reaches, either to the, both to the north and the south. But in trying to figure out how to get better circulation into downtown and into Indiana State University, the Cherry Street question has come up a number of times over the years. It's, can we do this? What would it take to do it? And the main reason we focused on it was because of southbound traffic on US 41 not being able to turn east and come into downtown until they're all the way down at Ohio Street. First, we focused on Wabash. Can't do it for a variety of reasons that I won't go into, but Cherry Street, we can. And to me, the success of this project and the success of Holman Center and the success of ISU and the success of downtown businesses is more likely if Cherry Street is two-way along its whole length. I've filed legislation to try to spur this conversation at the council level, which we'll be first talking about at next month's February 7th meeting. That legislation that I am filing, we've worked on the legislation, it hasn't been filed, it'll be filed by the end of this week. That would also turn 8th and 9th Street to two-way traffic along their entire lengths. These are long-term goals that as a person whose district is impacted along my district's whole length by these by this one-way pair of 8th and 9th and by the one-way Cherry Street as it exists, this is something that I feel needs at least a serious, complete conversation before we give up one block of this important network that you're proposing that we give up. I was just appointed the chair of the Planning, Zoning, and Improvements Committee, and I'm happy to convene a special meeting between now and of that committee between now and February 7th, if it's the council's wish, my fellow committee members, to try to have a more complete discussion of this and get a strategy on what's really possible as far as two-way streets go, and then consider that in light of this proposal to vacate a block of 8th Street or vice versa. To me, I've got to say that the graphics that you've provided for us are not very helpful. for us to be able to understand what's being proposed and how it looks and how it might actually, where things go. I deal with these kinds of drawings all the time, so I can figure it out. But as I look at it, this drawing in particular, I have fundamental questions about why we're not just building a tube over the road, over 8th Street, to connect the proposed parking structure between 8th and 9th on Cherry Street and the convention center that's been proposed between the edge of the Hilton Garden Inn and the west edge of 8th Street along Wabash Avenue. Has that been considered, going over traffic or under traffic so that 8th Street can remain open?
Madam President, Councilman Nation, we have considered all options for these two blocks as this was chosen as the best location for the convention center. And that included a number of different site plan renderings, and none of those could be done with 8th Street remaining. There is no way to get a 40,000 square foot convention center property that is going to seat at a largest event 1,000 people at a sit-down dinner and a 500 space parking garage with 8th Street remaining where it is. That we looked at everything. We have our architects are CSO architects out of Indianapolis. We have exhausted the site planning options to have the convention center on these two blocks.
I would need more information before I accept that. I'm a property owner at 7th and Wabash. I sold books for 20 years at a block away from where we're talking about. This area, and I know these parcels, I know who owns them, I know the buildings that exist there, I know the alleys. This is, to me, I believe that it could all fit on the parcels that are owned by the petitioners and 8th Street could stay open. And if your architects couldn't figure out how to do that, I would submit that you need a different architect.
Madam President, Councilmember Nation, CSO is an exceptional architectural firm. I've done projects all over the country, and they are as fine as I have ever worked with regard to creativity, sensitivity to owner, CIB needs, sensitivity to budget. There will be a public unveiling of the site plan and design next Tuesday.
After you're hoping this council votes on it?
Well, that was our intent, but that's up to the council. I would say with regard to your option to make other roadways two-way, obviously if that is the council's wishes and that occurs, we can provide a new analysis of our traffic impact study if indeed that comes to pass. But we can only provide a traffic impact study based upon what we know today and what we can project based upon the future development.
Fair enough. I yield.
Anyone else have questions or comments?
Yeah.
Yes,
Joe. What does it take and how long does it take if Mr. Nation does put this forward to make Cherry two-way? Is it a long process? Is it something that can be done within a time frame that would fit the convention center as well?
The effective date that I currently have, and Councilman Nation, do you have a problem with me? We had a tentative date of July 1, I believe, 2020. As far as an effective
date.
It's a substantial change, and I don't want to step on Mr. Ernest's toes. Obviously, I don't know anything about traffic studies, but it's going to be a considerable change in downtown traffic. We're going to have to petition the state to get some type of a turn lane off of 3rd Street, and we'll need to inform the public duly ahead of time on top of the addition of several new stoplight installations and stop signs as well. So that's why we kind of picked a date approximately 18 months out that would allow us ample time to go through and prepare for all of that. So with regard to whether or not that's going to be in conjunction or could work with the convention center and their project, currently I sincerely doubt they would be willing to put this on hold for 18 months until the two-way traffic is in place and then create a new study. But I don't want to speak for them either.
And it is possible the state could deny the petition for a turn lane or whatever?
Absolutely. I don't think that's something we have the power to do.
Okay.
On our own, as far as the turn lane is considered. Now, the two-way traffic, we can, because that's been turned back over to us, turned over to city control.
But the two-way we could do, but we just can't make it a...
Correct, but I don't... That would be an interesting situation if we had the two-way and weren't allowed to have the turn lane there, but...
Okay. Well, I mean, the project's a great project. There's no doubt about it, and I... certainly wouldn't want to stand in the way of downtown development. I would hope that maybe at some point in time we could get this Cherry Street two-way and 8th and 9th the same way, because I think that would be an ideal situation. At what point in time is the construction of this supposedly going to start, if this is approved?
Madam President, Councilman Azar. Our current schedule is still in flux. We have to float a bond issue to pay for some. We have some money that has already been allocated by the city, by the county, by the CIB, and we still have a gap that we have to fund with bonds. And so that issuance is going to occur sometime in April. Our target, we have a number of utilities that would have to be relocated, assuming that this vacation was approved by the council. We were planning on starting sometime in the spring or summer of this year for an opening in the end of 2020, early 2021.
Okay. I had another question. Can't remember what it was now. I yield for now. Oh, I remember. Question. You did not do a traffic study with Holman Center being open or having an event at the same time as the convention center?
That is my understanding. These traffic counters and the cameras were put out for a specific period of time and accounted traffic 24 hours a day for a certain duration. I cannot say that Holman Center had an event during that time. I don't know if they did or did not.
Is there a way to estimate if there was an event at a certain time with this many cars at Holman Center at the same time? In other words, if Holman Center had a function that was going to have 800 people at the same time the function at the convention center had 1,000 people, I would think that somehow they'd be able to figure out the traffic flow and the number of cars and so on, even if you don't sit there and count the cars.
We certainly could use our engineering models to model that. With regard to existing traffic flows, we like to use actual data that we can point to and say we counted this. We know that's what they do now. We know this many cars travel eastbound, this many cars stop and turn left, et cetera, and that's how we come up with the overall model of the adjacent roadways and the intersections. We could assume a Holman Center event in the evening, interestingly enough, and I would say for a point of argument, while I won't say that the largest event that this convention center may have would be in the daytime, I would assume it would be in the daytime. It's probably going to be a large sit-down lunch or dinner by the CIB, the Convention and Visitors Bureau, the Department of Realtors, whomever. And Holman Center events, by and large, are basketball events at night. So the two may conflict occasionally. But again, as we decided the size of this convention center and how big the ballroom needed to be to accommodate the largest event that we would hold here, the 900 to 1,000 seat sit-down event was assumed to be once a year, twice a year at the outside. Typically, this convention center, the ballroom is going to be able to be broken down into six different rooms. We have smaller conference space off of the ballroom on the first floor and second floor, and you're going to have a lot of smaller events that don't come anywhere near the 1,000 people.
I understand that, and I appreciate that. The only reason I ask for that model is so that we could maybe at least get a answer if the situation would happen. And if we could, I don't know how long it would take you to provide that, because I certainly wouldn't want to be one to hold up the project for months or anything like that. But is it something that could be brought to us in the February meeting? At least that would answer part of the questions that some of us have.
Before I let Matt take over, I understand exactly what he's saying. He says he's not comfortable estimating what home and center traffic may do, and I agree with that. Because as I said, we like to count existing conditions factually. I don't know if your city engineer has any existing counts for 8th Street, Cherry, that may accommodate a home and center event. I don't know if they have a basketball game coming up. This type of an effort to remobilize, recount traffic is not a insignificant undertaking.
Here's what I would suggest by either you or the city engineer or whoever. I happen to know there's a major basketball game that's going to be coming up on January 19th.
Exactly.
Am I correct?
Correct.
And it's a 2 o'clock in the afternoon game. And it's because of the 1979 basketball team that will be returning, and they will be honoring them with Larry Bird being here, and I'm sure that that's going to draw a significant amount of people. My suggestion is to do that study at that point in time during that time of day, and that should give you a pretty good idea of when the Holman Center will have a function and when the convention center, to give us some idea of the traffic. That's just a suggestion.
No, and I appreciate that suggestion. I just want to make one comment, and that is that this is a daytime game. I don't think they have daytime games very often. And so we will be counting something that is unique and rare.
I understand that.
Fine.
But in your,
I understand
in your,
what you're saying.
And in your comment earlier, most of your functions, you said, would be in the daytime.
That's correct.
So therefore, I believe by doing that, it gives us an idea of any major functions, either day or night, where we can decide the traffic pattern, at least a general idea. I'm not an engineer.
No,
I sell hamburgers.
That.
So, you know.
And prime rib. Thursday
and prime
nights.
Rib.
please.
All ISU basketball games on the weekend.
Okay.
Same thing as women.
I'd like to just address why a typical traffic study does not look at that situation. Typically, a traffic study looks at your average daily traffic, what you experience day to day, and the peak hours of that. Obviously, special events happen. Special events happen today with or without this convention center. There are sometimes plans that are not typical of average weekday plans to handle those. Sometimes traffic patrol officers are put out in the streets. Sometimes traffic signal timings are changed. The point I'm trying to make, and what illustrates it probably best, is whenever Lucas Oil Stadium was built, I don't remember how long ago that was, we get a phone call. Hey, do a traffic study. We need to know what the traffic conditions are going to be when Lucas Oil lets out a Colts game. What do you think? The answer is you can't build a street large enough to handle Lucas Oil traffic.
True.
So I said, why do you want a traffic study? Well, we want to know the traffic, okay? Once you know the traffic volumes, what are you going to do? You're going to widen the downtown streets and knock down buildings? No, you're right. We don't need a traffic study. We know it's a special event that happens 8 times a year, and we're just going to have to deal with it if we want the Colts here. So my point in being, I know it would give you a great idea of the traffic volumes when you combine them. My point probably is it probably won't happen very often. If it does happen, I think potentially there are other issues. You're not going to widen roads, most likely.
And the way you fix those is spot intersection treatments, whether it be signal timings, whether it be control officers, whether it be making sure that traffic gets out of the garages at different times, metering, things like that. It's just not a typical traffic condition. Therefore, it's really not something that you usually see in a study, unless you're doing, we've done some things with like the horse track, where it's actually specific to the event center, and we're looking at, okay, how do we get people into the parking garages, how do we get people in the lots, things like that.
Yeah. Thank you for your answer. I have one more question, and I'll yield. As far as the parking garages that you're proposing, one on each end, if that's what I saw correctly, one is for the convention center, and one is for the new the Hilton and the evidently Marriott that's going to be downtown. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. The hotel that would be for the convention center. If the convention center does not have a function and Holman Center does have a function, can the public utilize that parking garage for that function?
The convention center parking garage?
Yes.
Yes. We are in conversations with a parking operator, and our intent is that as a part of the convention center, the CIB operations, that parking garage is open to the public.
Okay, so that would be a positive then for Holman Center.
Oh, absolutely.
Because right now they don't.
It will provide on non-convention center days.
Right.
It will provide.
Because you're not
going to
always have
center.
Something at the convention
absolutely.
Center. Okay.
And it will also provide parking for Clabber Girl and any other activities that are occurring downtown.
Okay, I understand. Thank you very much for your answers. I yield.
If there's no further questions, I would make a motion to take action on Special Ordinance 40.
Second.
In other words, vote to vote first.
Madam Chairman, my concern with taking action is that it requires a two-thirds vote tonight if we do take action. I'm not sure we have that. I also think that there are some questions that may still need to be answered, and I don't think a couple of weeks will, you know, harm the project. And then if we vote on it at the next meeting, it would not take a two-thirds. It would only take a simple majority. Am I correct?
You are correct.
Thank you. Okay.
Okay. Well, I'm willing to withdraw that. But I, as a side note, in phone calls I've made and stuff, if 8th Street isn't closed with the current designs and everything, this won't happen. So I don't think we want to roll the dice too much.
Don't misunderstand me. I'm not speaking against.
I want to make sure it's understood that if
I'm not against the project,
there's a good chance that this won't happen.
I understand.
Okay.
And I mean, I'm willing to take a chance on the vote tonight if everybody else is.
I'll withdraw that. I'll withdraw.
Okay. Madam President. Yes. I got a legal question. If we vote on this tonight, doesn't pass, do we still get to vote on this and next time we meet?
No.
Does that kill the project, or what is it?
Well, it's one. The council rules are 1 year, so you either have to have a substantial change or you'd have to vote to suspend council rules.
It seems odd. We're not really voting on the project. We're just voting to vote on the first reading. It seems like we should still be able to have our second reading in 3 weeks or whenever we meet again.
We can.
If you can vote to vote, but if the vote then fails, the item's defeated.
Yeah,
you
that,
can't have a
that
second.
Doesn't make any sense to me. But, I mean, I'm not disagreeing with you. But
I agree with you.
With you on
that's
that.
Why I'm saying is
so,
don't roll the dice on this.
So I have a...
Go ahead. I'm
sorry.
You're fine.
I apologize.
No, you're fine. You're fine.
Councilman Garrison.
We're neighbors. We're okay.
I'd like an answer from, I don't know who can give me the answer, but I want an answer. If we don't vote on this, will that kill the project? Because if that's the case.
It gets moved to next.
You mean if we don't vote on it tonight?
Right.
Okay. Thank you. I just want to clarify. Go ahead.
Madam President, Commissioner Aller, it will not kill the project if we have to wait 2 weeks.
Okay, because I don't want to see that happen.
That will not happen. If 8th Street is not vacated, that will kill the project.
Okay. Yeah.
That was my
thank you, Mr.
My concern.
Any other discussion, Council?
Just a comment. If the Council wants, they can hold another meeting before February 7th on this. But if you do not take action tonight, then by rules, it has to be on February 7th, right? Because that's the next regular meeting. So you can't change your mind in a week and want to have it at a special call.
So it'll just be moved to next month.
It'll be moved to our first meeting in February, which is February 7th.
Which that's fine. That was fine with me. I just wanted to make sure that if that's what happened, that this project was still on the go and not.
That, Madam Chairman, the defeating the motion to take action only stalls it to next month to vote on the ordinance. It does not kill the ordinance.
No, it just stalls until the second.
I just want to make sure the public and everybody knows that.
But if it's a unanimous to take action.
Well, it's not going to be because I'm going to vote no. So there, it's a dead duck no matter what.
That motion has been withdrawn, so I think we can move on from that. Mr. Morris is in agreement.
Madam President.
Yes.
Just one more thing. I hope that the petitioners and their contractors and lawyers don't misconstrue my questioning about this and my fellow council members. It's not my intention to kill this. I fully expect us to vacate this block of 8th Street when it comes to a vote. I may or may not be in favor of it, but I'm sure there will be enough votes on this council to get it done. My purpose in raising these questions is for us to have a complete, or at least more complete, conversation about the impact of traffic and the long-term goals of two-way traffic on 8th Street, 9th Street, and Cherry Street. Again, to bring this around full circle, I fully believe that if we can figure out how to do that, it'll be better for all parties concerned, including all of this construction that's proposed, which, of course, I want to see happen in downtown Terre Haute. This isn't me trying to be a stick in the mud. This is me trying to spur us all to have an honest conversation about the impacts that this is likely to have, and a conversation within the council and city government about whether or not and when we can actually go to two-way traffic. My fear is, there was when I started down this path with talking about the legislation, that somehow this effort would keep two-way traffic from happening. And I'm not convinced that it may not look as simple as two-way traffic on all those streets along their whole lengths. There may well be a section of 9th Street and a section of Cherry Street that need to stay one way. But I want to have the conversation before we say, all right, take the block of 8th Street, and we'll just deal with the fallout from it. So I'm trying to be clear. That's my intention. On that, I'll yield.
Well, I have no problem with that in those discussions, but I say let's build the hotel, take 8th Street, block it off, and do a traffic study with all those that you're talking about after that. That's my thing, what I'm saying. I mean, I have no problem discussing that, but I don't want to jeopardize any of this because I think if we keep delaying, it's not going to happen. And that's my personal opinion. I yield.
Councilperson
Nasser? I just want to follow up with what Council Morris said regarding, I think we should do the street and then do the project and see where it's going, because me being on the council for 3 years, it seems like anybody that's asked, whether it's with the jail or with this traffic study, anybody that tries to do a crystal ball analysis seems to get beat up because it's kind of in the eye of the beholder. So I think that having those discussions would be prudent if we waited until the project was completed. I yield.
Okay, that being said, I just want to add that for the public, that the traffic study that was done by the folks for the CIB is on the city website, if you want to look at that. So, next item of business.
Special Ordinance 42, 2018, amending Special Ordinance 14, 2018, the 2019 City Hall salary ordinance. I'm the petitioner.
You're the petitioner. Please tell us.
I'm the petitioner.
Madam petitioner, please.
Michelle Edwards, City Clerk. This is a second part of amending it to a full-time position from a part-time position. So we had to amend the City Hall salary ordinance in order to indicate that there would be a full-time position in the non-reverting account. This is not general fund money. I will be happy to answer any questions.
And I'll just remind council people that, again, first reading, so if we do want to consider this tonight, we need to vote, and then we would vote on the substance of the ordinance. Is there anyone in the public who would like to speak on Special Ordinance 42-2018? Council?
Madam President.
Mr. Nation.
If there's no further comment, I move that we take action tonight on Special Ordinance number 42.
Second.
Councilman Nation has moved and Councilman Morris has seconded that we take action this evening on Special Ordinance 42-2018. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It passes.
So, Madam President.
Mr.
I move that we vote on approve Special Ordinance number 42-2018.
Second.
Councilman Nation has moved and Councilman Morris has seconded that we approve Special Ordinance 42-2018. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Special Ordinance 42 passes.
Move to adjourn.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Passes.